pay yourself $50 on each side of the trade and buy VOO and don't touch it for 20 years. Because the reality is the $50 is more of a mental game than it is anything, but the historic compounding will provide you a great life.
Before we dive in, I want to share something with you. Now, these are brands I actually use in my own life. They aren't sponsors yet, but I believe in what they represent. If you're the kind of person who listens to T-Pow Labs or The Picture of Wealth, chances are you're already dialed into a few of these. But in case you're not, I have a few creative brand mentions. Gut Check, helping you decode your gut health so you can perform better from the inside out.
That's quite fast. Mine is not that fast.
Oh, do you have the older one? Because I was debating on, I think they released a newer one, a version
maybe.
2 or something.
I'm a late adopter, Gary.
Hey, is your assistant AI?
No, but that would be cool if her assistant name was Julie. Yeah, that would be. No, she's a person. And my office is in a town called Kelowna, British Columbia. So it's about 4 hours from Vancouver.
God, I love your part of the country, part of the world. I've been in Vancouver. I was in Vancouver the last time I was in there. I think it was like the 1990s.
Yeah.
But I'm a hiker. And I think I wrote down, I think I wrote some notes like when you and I scheduled this, I wrote some notes and I think I put on here. Hold on. Let me see where it is. Because I did write down, I said, I think your logo is like a hiker, isn't it? Yeah. Great logo. Yeah. Logo, podcast. The hiker.
Yeah. The Picture of Wealth podcast. Just that was a logo from a few years ago and it just stuck. It's just we've looked at changing, but
your guests, I did listen to your podcast, are way more like smarter than I am.
No, but this I'm genuinely interested in hearing and not even hearing. And you might think, oh, who is this guy to tell me he's not interested in me? But I'm interested that we have two people. So I've dabbled in day trading since my first stock was Jones Soda and Pfizer back in 2003 when I worked in the oil patch. And then I got out of it and I got into the business. And again, I'm still in the business, believe in dividend paying stocks for wealthy families, but always had this sort of, and it usually goes in line with the more the market goes down, the more I get excited about day trading and I get back into it. And then it gets harder to find premiums on options and just different stuff.
But Dustin, I don't do options. Not once have I ever done options.
Yeah. So,
in fact, I was talking with Seeking Alpha. They have me doing, I'm going to be a guest on their investing experts podcast. They've had me on there before. It's Chris Camillo. If you've ever heard that name.
No, I'll start following him.
Yeah. He's a guy who turned 60,000 into 60 million. I
heard you talking about that today, but I didn't catch the name.
Awesome.
And most importantly, did you figure out the ant problem you had?
Which one? Oh, the ants? Yeah. Fuck. You did listen. So I am a lawn geek. Oh. And part of being a lawn geek is making sure that bugs don't wind up in the lawn.
Gotcha.
And typically what happens, and I used to live on a golf course, so a groundskeeper taught me this. He said, here's the thing. He said, the groundskeeper said, you're never going to beat me. The bugs are going to come off the golf course and they're going to come into your yard. He goes, my insecticides are way stronger than yours. And so they're going to come in. My thought is, and I tell my girlfriend this all the time, she saw the video and she's, oh my God, that's disgusting. How are we living? And I said, as much as I put insecticides on the lawn to keep the lawn nice, there's no way I can stop them from coming in under the slab or into the house.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. And you're a hiker. I'm a camper. I've eaten way more bugs in my life than probably were on that damn dish than that I saw. So, yeah.
Well, I'm happy that you got your lawn figured out because that's wealth in my mind is having your lawn.
The suburban dad dream. And I'm not a dad, but it's the suburban guy dream.
Well, I heard you mention it today on the podcast, and this is too much information for the listener, but every morning I usually go to the gym and I hate doing cardio, but I've been hitting the stepper and working on my cheeks and getting my heart rate up. But I watch your YouTube while the sort of, because I'm in BC, you're East Coast, you're Florida, Atlanta. So it's like, you're over there and so you're ahead. So at 7 a.m, you're already ready to go. And the market is just been getting going. Yeah, I'm excited for this podcast because again, I'm in the business. You're day trading. And so one of the things that intrigues me is you do make a living from it. And again, so listener, I've been in the business 20 years, trading, technical analysis, all that stuff that my CFA staff don't love about technical. They're more like, get down to the foundation, the fundamentals. But I like it when you do the technical, because I think more and more as people get visual, more and more retail investors come online and become capable humans. And there isn't this curtain that Dustin and his cronies in the investment world are the end all be all, because they're not. And it's just a fact. And with ChatGPT and the ability and the content on YouTube that gifts like you, and I won't give other plugs to other people, but produce, there is good stuff on there. So I would love to just get a 2 minute backstory on how you manage your program. So again, listener, Gary runs Daily Stock Picks and is running his life from a place of complete independence and day trading. You do also have an advisor. So I do want to hear about that a little bit.
I do, yes.
Okay, but I think that's important to cast some reality for people. And again, I don't know where your brain went when I laid all that out, but give us a Cole's notes of why you're choosing this sort of career path.
So here's what it is. I actually was a product manager for internet companies. And if the American listeners know, it was Earthlink, the dial-up right. internet company. And you're probably way too young to even know Earthlink. But it was dial-up internet. So take you back to the days of the 56K modem. I was still working at Earthlink in 2020 and 2019, right before COVID. I told them I thought I had enough money and I wanted to just leave. And they said, hey, can you stay on for another month? And I said, yeah, I'll leave January 31st, 2020. We all know what happened in March of 2020.
28 was the high.
Yeah. I think I lost 40%. Me and my buddy Steve, we said, we're going to day trade and we're going to do this. And I had a history. Steve actually had sat out a large portion of the rally for 2000 to 2020. And the reason was he was so scared of the quote unquote lost decade. And so we found this balance in between where we were able to day trade. And once we lost 40%, we realized, okay, we've got to make it back. Now, I believe it was April. Nobody knew oil could go negative. I lost six figures in UCO, which is a triple leverage oil ETF. And I said, F this, I'm going to learn how to actually trade a commodity and trade this stuff. And I had done charts before. I had used Active Trader Pro from Fidelity, and I'd used Thinkorswim and other kind of free tools to learn, okay, here's a candlestick, here's a moving average, here's the stuff. Steve and I found, we went on YouTube. This is how easy it is these days to just learn. We went on YouTube. We found a trading channel called Trading Rush, I believe it is. And he backtested the MACD. And that was the single indicator, he said, that actually wound up doing the best. And so Steve and I said, okay, we want to develop something around the MACD. So we started playing with stuff. We found TrendSpider. And TrendSpider allows us to take those technicals, put in the moving averages and all that. We developed this four-hour algorithm that actually winds up doing really well on the tech stocks that I trade. So when you say day trading, I would classify myself more of a swing trader these days. If I didn't have the podcast, I would be a day trader. But you even said it during the time when the market's open. That's when you really want to be a day trader. Every day trader I know is done by 10 o'clock in the morning because the volatility's there. So by the time, I think it's about 11 o'clock that I'm usually done with my podcast. But to go back to the algorithm, we said we wanted to find something. TrendSpider helped us develop it just by answering our questions and stuff, because those guys are significantly more technical than we are. But we just learned on the internet, and we learned through trial and error. And I get on Spaces with the Wolf Crew a lot on Twitter. And those guys always, yeah, I'm always amazed at the actual day traders. And I'm telling these guys, I just bought a couple $100,000 of QQQ or whatever, and I'm just buying and holding. And these guys are like, I took a 10% profit on this option today. I could have gotten 20%. And I'm thinking maybe I should do options at some point. Everybody loves to talk about it.
I can tell you from experience that it comes and goes. And I did take one time, there's a guy, Rule One Investing, Phil Town. Not that I'm not affiliated with him, but he was traveling with Tony Robbins and got everyone hyped up. And so then we did this weekend retreat. And then I signed up for the 1 year long, 2 days a week, he would live trade options with us for 2 hours. So we do a little analysis. And while the market was open, we would watch him, you know, make trades. And so that was an eye-opener and I got excited about it and then it fizzled out. But in this last little April, I went, so Tim Ferriss, I don't know if you follow
yeah,
his stuff.
I know
but
Tim, yeah.
He calls it his own personal MBA. And so back in the day, he took $200,000 and he set it aside and he said, okay, I'm going to purposely lose this. If he doesn't, great. But if it goes to zero, he's cool with that. But he wants to meet people. He wants to learn something significant that would help him perpetuate his journey. And so that's what I did in April, was that we were just waiting. And as soon as those couple of days, I was like, COVID is not getting me again, because I missed, I literally, this is a true story, I was filling up gas during COVID. They just laid off, they just told everyone they can't go to work in BC or British Columbia. And I was filling up gas in jerry cans. I bought ammo at Canadian Tire, like the department store. And my wife was like, you got to go stop at the grocery store. And as I'm filling up gas, I got my phone and I had an ETF, like mobile. I had a little bit of money in there. And it was, part of it was our emergency savings. So I did 21,000 on about March, like late March, like near the bottom. Wow. And not by strategy. It was just like, I was looking at the jerry cans past my phone as I'm filling it up and I'm going, if this is the end, but it's not, I at least want to say that I did something. And so obviously I wish I did more. So April happens and, you know, I'm starting to watch you and starting to get it going and it's okay. The things that you want to own, the things that you believe in is a lot different than, again, I think you should maybe help listener segregate momentum trading. And how did you buy Apple at $2? How did, you know, so you weren't looking at chart and then maybe for an entry. But what is momentum / long-term investor, but with the ability to know when to get out, if that makes sense?
So Chris Camillo puts it best. And I was just telling you about Chris Camillo. He's a guy that turned like 60,000 into 600 million, whatever the number is, it's impressive, whatever it is. And he calls it social arbitrage investing. And so you asked about Apple. How did I know in 2004, I think it was 2004 or 2006 that I actually bought it. How did I know? I didn't. And it wasn't $2. I think it was around $100 a share, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Gotcha.
It was still higher. It's just today's value is $2 a share. So what's interesting about Apple and what's interesting about today, the risk was the same. So when Apple came out with their iPhone, it didn't have a keyboard. And BlackBerry was the big thing back then. And everybody said, and even my IT department said, you can't have an iPhone because it's not secure. BlackBerry is secure. So I had to carry a separate phone and my work phone, which was a BlackBerry with the keyboard. But I believed in the iPhone. And I said, this is so much better with the apps and things of that sort. And I also owned Google back then. They later released Android, and that's now the big platform. And those were the two main kind of things that pushed me towards that is when Mark Zuckerberg in Meta said, we're going to go mobile. I mean, again, that was a great time to buy into to Meta. During the IPO, I think it was just after the IPO that they said, hey, we're going to go from a website to a mobile thing. So it's about taking those catalysts and saying, okay, I believe in this. And then what you do is Warren Buffett says, cut your weeds and water your flowers. I think it was a famous Peter Lynch quote that he says that, and I bring it up all the time. As you start winning, start adding to it. As you start losing, cut it. You know, it doesn't take a genius, and you and I, technical, you don't have to be a genius to do this, but go to a monthly chart on any stock. And if you see it, that it's upper left to bottom right, that's a loser. On a monthly chart. If you see it bottom left to upper right, that's a winner. And if you break moving averages and key, look at the 200 day, the 50 day, I use the 9 and the 21 for my short and medium term, but the 50 and the 200 are pretty standard. And it's super, super simple when you can find a trend. There's another YouTube channel called Tori Trades, and I've brought her up several times. She's fantastic. Now, she does brag out there that, hey, I just made $30,000 off of this trade. I try not to do that. I try and tell people when I go into stuff, I don't release like my net worth or anything. I did release the other day. I was on a Fire podcast and it came up and I said, Fidelity's thing says I'm going to die with $43 million in the bank. I am not going to die. There is, I don't have $43 million for full disclosure, but Tory Trades does it great. She literally trades platinum, I think, or palladium, something on a trend line. She doesn't use anything other than her mobile phone. So the tools that people have out there today are able to A, either make them a ton of money if they know what they're doing, but you will lose money. That's just the simple fact of the market is you're never going to have 100% win rate. I talk about SEDGE, Solar Edge. It was funny because my technical analysis said, hey, this is in a range between 280 and 300. And this was a few years back. And I hit it between that range where I would just sell it over 300 and buy it under 280. I think I hit it like four or five times. Then the seventh time that I hit it, it gets down to 250. And I'm like, well, let me try a little bit more. And I think it's going to go back to 200. It didn't. I think I stopped selling it like 70.
So
you're not going to win all the time. The tools are out there. Like you said, AI is a phenomenal tool. I think not only will there be one person, billion-dollar company probably created within the next 5 years, but with AI, I can actually upload like my four-hour algorithm that I've developed in TrendSpider. I'm planning on doing this. It's just because I'm lazy and I haven't done it. But I'm going to upload it to AI and say, can you optimize this? And I know TrendSpider, I just had a meeting with them the other day. They're going to release a large language model on things of that sort that you can do. So I think the winning is going to come to more technical trading. I didn't believe in my early life in the candlesticks. And guys my age typically don't do technical trading. There's a large amount that just do technical trading on day trading. But investors, we didn't believe in technicals back then. They've proven to me that it actually works. I think the universe works on mathematics. And I think the open market, you look at United Healthcare, just the drop that it's done. Palantir has 1/5 the amount of revenue, I think, that United Healthcare has. But you can buy United Healthcare for 1/5 the price of Palantir today, and it's got more revenue and cash generation. I'm still not buying it. Open market where you have to find your winners. And I will go down. I listen to this guy, Leon Cooperman, on CNBC all the time. He is one of those Buffett-style billionaires. Okay. The guy told a story about how right after COVID, he needed a new car because his 13-year-old Honda had given up. And they asked him, what car did you buy? And he goes, I bought a Kia. This a freaking billionaire bought a Kia. And that's how logical he is. And he talks a lot about the Nifty 50 back in the 70s. And you can Google it and nobody exactly knows what the 50 stocks are, but there's only one around and it's GE. I don't think Walmart was part of it, but they're not around. So at some point in time, that Mag 7 trade that I've built my entire fortune on is going to be a bad trade. It's about knowing when to get out. And so I think Apple, you brought up Apple. I will tell people, I hadn't sold Apple until 2022. And as the Mag 7 started to come down, I started to take some profits in 2022. The average cost then was like a dollar. And I've still got the large majority of what I purchased way back when, just because it's worth so much. And I'm a minimalist in my lifestyle. I don't spend a lot of my mother started yelling at me the other day when she found out that I was going to die with $43 million in the bank. What the hell's wrong with you? You can't have that much money. So
how do you generate cash flow for life? That's if you're...
So before the podcast was actually cash flow positive, I lived off of essentially my trading and some long-term capital gains because I hate short-term capital gains. I really do.
In the States, we just have capital gains in Canada. So there's two different ones you have?
Here in the States, if you hold something for less than a year, it's basically taxed at your income rate, which can, for me, can be 36%.
Yeah.
The long-term capital gains rate is between 15%, but if you make more than, I think, $400,000 for me being single, it's 20%. And so last year was my first year in 20% tax bracket, which was unfortunate. I didn't time things right, but it was because the podcast really took off and I made much more money than I actually expected. And so by the end of the year, I had gone over that 400,000. Right. And it's like my accountant said, F you, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. So that you're kind of segueing me into, why don't you just manage all your own money? Why do you have a Fidelity guy?
I have a Fidelity guy, but he doesn't manage my money. So my Fidelity guy is just an advisor. So Fidelity assigns you an advisor. I think even people smaller than me, I know they have, I'm a high net worth client of Fidelity, so I have certain benefits, right. Like probably being able to get this guy on the weekend to talk to me if I right. need to. And I am not a financial advisor, so I don't have any qualifications whatsoever. I've never taken a test. I've never done anything of the sort. So he is, and he told me when you go for your Service 7 license or one of those licenses where to become a financial.
Series 7,
yeah. He said if the book is 500 pages, 499 of it is on bonds. I know nothing about bonds. Yeah. So I like to bounce things off of somebody who's actually way more educated than I am. And he gives me great advice. Like, for instance, in 2022, I said, how can I unwind this Apple trade? How can I unwind this position in a tax-efficient manner? And he gave me ideas. He doesn't do any of it. It's just an advice kind of thing.
Right.
So he is fantastic. I don't pay him a dime. I don't pay Fidelity a dime for that. It's a free service. But I do have him as a resource if I need to. Like, for instance, the podcast is now so profitable that I turned it into a C Corp here in the States. And the C Corp is owned by my LLC. And this is all my, I had to hire an accountant to do all this.
For Canadians, it's your holdco owns your opco is what Gary's talking about.
Yes. And essentially I can make it much more tax efficient for the podcast, but that's the large majority of my earnings now. And I'm putting a large amount of that away because I don't need money. I can make enough money off of my trading and some of the long-term capital gains that the majority of the earnings is going to go into my retirement because I was so good at trading and just, you know, I didn't manage my retirement fund. And my parents who are in their 80s, they're in a situation now where they have so much in their retirement, they have this required mandatory distribution,
right,
which kills them. And so they told me a few years ago, maybe about 5-10 years ago, hey, don't save so much for retirement. Start trading and making sure that you have enough to live on. And I knew that I wanted to retire early. So I made sure that the brokerage account was the focus of my trade. Even though I had to make short-term trades in there, it's still long-term. So the plan, it was, and I say it on my podcast all the time, if you're trading without a plan, you're just gambling. And so if, for instance, me, I bought, what did I buy? I bought CrowdStrike. I think it was the day that Trump said buy stocks. And I had 5 stocks in a watch list that said, no matter what, if they're down 5%, you don't ask questions, you just buy. And so I decided when he said buy stocks, I'm going to buy all 5 of those stocks. I don't care. I know they're down, but I'm just going to buy all 5. And I already had positions in them, but I just wound up buying more. So I think the planning stage of my brokerage account was very key in my doing. Make no mistake, I make a good living off this podcast now. It is my focus because more fulfillment comes. I don't need money to fulfill me. The fulfillment comes from the emails from people that say, hey, you changed my life. I didn't know what I was doing before I got to you. I just had some 19-year-old kid hit me up on YouTube Live the other day. And he said, hey, can I send you a stock to tell me if it's a good or buy? I said, I probably don't own it. So I'd probably tell you it's not a good buy. Give me the elevator pitch in an email. And he gave me the elevator pitch and it was cute. There were some misspellings and stuff in it. And you could tell it was typed on an iPhone. And I said, I'm going to respond because you replied on an iPhone. If I saw Google Android, F you. I don't like green button.
You bring up a good point about because you were talking this morning about Google being a buy, and I've been watching it, and it's search revenue be down, and so it's getting beat up. But as I was in the shower this morning, I was going, like, usually I would, if I start to look at stuff, I'll sell options low, and I'll start to, if it's a stock I want, okay, that's how I would enter. Other than I'm learning, the more you do that, the more cash strapped you get, you're committing that. So my decision on Google, though, is I don't use Google. I actually am annoyed, like I don't do ads on Google for my business. I'm actually annoyed that they put sponsored search thing. So it's, I don't even like the business. I'm a user, but that analysis was enough. It's like, it's off my watch list, even though It shows stuff. It's so that listener, if you're looking at things, it's Phil Town called it circle of competence, because then you're going to have the conviction to ride through the shitty times that you're like, oh, I love race cars. And so I'm a Ferrari, like race. Or, and only because I brought that one up, I'm tangenting a bit, but I want you to give us your Coles notes, how you process stocks. So a stock like Ferrari or a stock like even like Tesla is now 307 or whatever, three over 300. Owning a stock that's $300 a share versus owning a stock that's say even $50 or $5. There's a feeling that this Tesla can't go to 700. But in your experience with trading the stocks you've had, you mentioned it, Apple. So Apple has done splits to reduce the perceived price of the stock. Explain to the listener how that works and how you process. Like, I own Adobe and I bought it at $220. It's now $400. I'm thinking of selling because there's no way it could go to 800. But a $4 stock, Applied Digital or something, might go to $8. That'd be easier. But how do you process that? And this is not buy or sell recommendation for anyone.
No. So NVIDIA is a great example. I think NVIDIA is one of those that a lot of people own the entire market. It's a $3 trillion market cap, which is the three largest companies, Microsoft, Apple, and NVIDIA. They're the only three to ever hit $3 trillion. I don't think the market will allow it to go to $6 trillion. So it's trading at 130 right now. I don't think you're going to 260. Could it? Absolutely. Because if they get enough revenue that continues to grow them at 116%. Now, I don't think they can grow at 116% because the entire GDP of the United States is not going into NVIDIA. But just, I think it's capped with that point. You brought up Tesla. It's interesting because I bought a Model 3 in 2018. My buddy bought a Model 3 in 2018 too. He took his entire portfolio and said, I love this car so much, I am going to buy the stock with my entire portfolio. He took his retirement, everything, one stock, and he bought a Tesla. He retired a multi-millionaire a few years ago. But I didn't have that conviction. And at that 2018, the risk was there. And I didn't believe it. Even though I loved my car, I was trading Tesla. I wasn't owning it. And part of the reason was because of the volatility. And so I tell people, if you can sleep at night, your portfolio is okay. Risk tolerance is a real thing and it's a real muscle. I had to sit through Apple. I think there are four different times, and I show this a lot of times on my channel, four different times it had pullbacks of 40% or more. And we're talking a seven-figure position having a pullback of 40% or more. I think the most was about 60%. I lived through it and I didn't get out of it. And so you'll talk to a lot of traders and a lot of investors who say, hey, if you believe in the stock and the narrative is still the same, the price shouldn't matter. And Robinhood is a great example for me right now. I effing hate that company because of the GameStop stuff that went on.
Yeah.
You think they colluded with Citadel to actually allow nobody to actually sell the stock, or was it buy? I forget which one it was. But again, I hate them for that because I think they manipulated the market. But I heard a story, and this was a great story, about how Robinhood, there is going to be a transition of wealth in this country, in the United States in particular, from the boomer generation down to their kids. And the kids aren't going to keep their money in JP, F, and Morgan. They are going to put it into where they can trade it and they can manage it in the apps that they're used to. So that's Robinhood. And then I heard the second story and I was on board with that. And I'm like, yeah, probably going to happen. Probably going to help Robinhood. Probably bullish. Then I heard the story of how they got the sports betting. So you can take your IRA right now in your retirement account and bet on the effing Phillies or the Yankees tonight. You can literally in the States do that. And they went to the regulators and they said, we want to do sports betting. And the regulators said, but you've got to jump through all these hoops. So what did the Robinhood management do? they went to what's called the prediction markets. Now, the prediction markets aren't regulated. It's just a prediction. It's not sports betting. It's just a prediction. So in my mind, you need a good company with good products, with good profits, and good management. And the good management part now starts to weigh on Robinhood because I think they are doing things differently than everybody else. Nobody else, like Fidelity, like JP Morgan, they're not in the prediction markets. And I tell people all the time, I have a Webull account, a very small Webull account that I only put $1,000 into. My life is not going to change if I lose $1,000. So I figured, okay, I'm going to do triple leverage DTFs. Again, I don't do options. So I'm going to use those triple leverage DTFs. I'm going to trade those. I'm going to go YOLO on some stocks. I think about half of the actual account is in iBit, which is Bitcoin. I'm too dumb to buy Bitcoin, and I don't want to pay the fees that Bitcoin comes with on some of those trading platforms. Mm-hmm. So I bought iBit. But again, if that goes to zero, my life doesn't change. So I like to have a separate account that I don't need to look at. In fact, I could probably even hold it up on camera. I think it's at $11,700 now that $1,000 turned into.
Right.
So I think, again, if I can point this out to your listeners, it's about having a plan. I don't care what that plan is, but if the plan is constantly in motion and constantly getting changed, but you have a plan, then I think it turns out in the end. And
what do you think a specific plan sounds like? If listener doesn't even have the imagination to know what a plan would be.
So my plan, I can tell you from an overview perspective, in my late 30s, I graduated college when I was 25. I took 4 years off between high school and college to play in a band and do whatever you do in a band. I was a drummer. So my plan in my late 20s was I don't want to work for the rest of my life. I want to retire early. Now, I didn't know exactly what that meant. And my late 20s was actually the late 90s. And so we had it was the late 80s. So I was born in 1970s. In my late 20s, I was looking at, okay, I'm going to retire early. And I didn't know what that was. Did a little bit of research, found out this that I needed to find out a number. Just figured, okay, I'm going to figure out a number of a salary that I want to live on. And I am going to try and reach that number at some point in time. And so to live on that number, this is a plan. And it had nothing to do with stocks. To get to that plan, I had to figure out how to get money. Well, my job wasn't always the best paying. I made good money. But I think I make more money in my podcast now than I ever did, by the way, working. I think my top year working was like $130,000, $140,000. So I did well, but I didn't crack $100,000 until I was in my late 40s. So it wasn't like I had this whole bank of money and stuff like that, but I lived very economically and I made sure that I was putting money into the market. Now, I didn't put money into the market to optimize it. I put money into the market where I thought it would grow at a good rate. For instance, Netflix was one that I wanted to buy when they went from DVDs to streaming. I bought it, but I didn't buy it big enough. It wasn't my Apple position. If I had put as much money as I put into Apple, I would be dying with $89 million instead of $43 million. Right. It would be twice the amount. But I traded a lot of those positions. Apple was the only one that I really felt comfortable holding on to it. And I always said to myself, it's my savings account and I'm not going to touch it. And it turned out to be a good call. Again, monthly candles, it's easy to try and find those good calls. It's not hard.
What would you say about... So this is kind of a two-part question. Do you get super dorky on tracking your exact... trades in, trades out, pre-trade, X out the trade, and then, you know, what the rate of return is? Or is it more just, hey, I'm obviously doing well, I can look at the rate of return on my thing? And second question, how do you manage sort of the mentality of like, how well my stocks are doing is my worth or my identity as a man or as a person? And can you decouple those?
Yeah, if I went to zero, I can tell you right now, the inherent feeling of me, I have enough money to live the rest of my life logically, I still feel poor. Mm-hmm. So in April, when that pulled back, I was literally telling my girlfriend, I might have to go back to work. And logically, yeah. If people knew my net worth, they would say, what the hell is wrong with you? You're never going to have to work again.
Yeah.
So I don't tie money to anything of that sort. I never tied my salary. I did in early in my career, I did learn I need to ask for what I'm worth. And so when I was working for someone else, I think they undervalued me for quite a while. And I just found out that I just need to figure out where I'm happy. And if I'm not happy, I need to move on. I was very loyal. I only had 4 or 5 total companies that I worked for throughout my 20, 25 year career. I don't even know how long it was. So it wasn't like I was jumping from job to job, but I had plenty of friends who have more money than I do now, but spent quite a bit more during me. Mm-hmm. And they made a lot more by moving around and to job. But as far as tracking my trades, I'll give you a recent one, Hims, which the logic was there. I even put it out on the podcast. I said, earnings are coming up. They didn't include GLP-1 in the first quarter estimates when they forecasted. It's got about a 30% short position, and it's trading right in the middle of its 52-week range. I said, I'm just going to put some money in here, and I'm going to have a floor. And I do this for most of my quote-unquote trades. First, I identify, is it an investment? Is it a trade? What am I actually doing with this money? Because you don't go out and just buy, hey, I'm going to buy a motorcycle today or a car.
Right.
It's two totally different purchases. So you've got to identify, okay, what am I doing with this money? The second thing that I normally do is, okay, I'm willing to pay this amount and I'm going to put in an order for this amount. And I'm going to identify the bottom, which is the risk, and the top, which is the gain. And I'm going to put those in to a journal. I personally use SavvyTrader. It's completely free. I found that website. In fact, I have 10 burner portfolios on there. I've got some that I provide, but I love that site. It's a great journaling tool. And I will put in there a note about why I bought this stock. What's the upside? Now, the Hims position, I think I bought it like $40 and it squeezed up to about, I think, $55. And then it pulled back to 50. And I said, I don't want to get cut out of this because 50 was my target. And I said, right, I'm perfectly happy selling at 50. Took the 20% gain. I think it was like 23% or something like that. And it was a very nice gain. It squeezed up to 65, I think, today. And I tell people, you can't always time things and you're not going to make things perfect. But that company actually is one that I want to own long term. But my thesis on that trade was not long term. My thesis on that trade was it's in a short squeeze. And because they had such good earnings, it's going up because the shorts have to cover themselves. I want to buy that stock in the 30s for my long term position. So I knew exactly what I was doing. I took my profits and got out. It's about identifying that stuff before you get into it. And if your thesis is wrong, again, you have that downside already identified and the risk isn't there. I can always play another day. And it brings up a great point. And I tell people this all the time. When I first started trading, you had to pick up the phone and call a broker and pay $50 on each side of the trade. It was $50 for each damn trade. And it didn't matter if it was one share or 20. Apple, if it was trading at $50 or $100, you still had to pay the $50 toll commission to actually buy it and sell it. So I tell people today, free trading, it just seems a little too easy. But if it's too easy for you and you're not making money, to make sure that you're getting an A-plus setup, pay yourself $50 on each side of the trade and buy VOO and don't touch it for 20 years. Because the reality is the $50 is more of a mental game than it is anything, but the historic compounding will provide you a great life. If you're trading too much and you're taking $50, like you said, if you're cash strapped and you don't have the $50 to pay, don't freaking take the trade.
Don't trade, yeah.
Yeah, pay yourself before you pay others. And as a business owner, I listened to My First Millions podcast and they talk about all the time how they didn't take any salaries out of the companies that they founded and how they should have started doing that earlier in the career of the company. And I just take that and I say, hey, let's just move it over to the trading platform because there's a lot of young kids who got spoiled on this free trading. And they're taking options trades yeah. And they're blowing up their accounts. And they're saying, I'm going to make it again. And there's a lot of people out there who will take advantage of you. And that's part of the reason why I don't say, hey, my 4-hour algorithm is great and you can use it and you can get it in TrendSpider if you sign up for the yearly subscription. But as far as like a texting service, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Gary, we got lots to talk about next podcast, I'm sure. But where can people find more information on your content?
The Linktree, linktr.ee/dailystockpick, no S, even though I think I own the S one too, but it's just Daily Stock Pick. And all of the links are there. You can listen on Spotify. And by the way, if you listen on Spotify, leave me 5 stars because I think
we got to short squeeze those negative Nellies out of there.
Did you hear it this morning?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
I am, but politically, by the way, and I love Canada, by the way, F Trump for you guys have the best hiking in the world. And I'm a hiker too, but politically I'm way center of the moat. You may like me one day, but you may hate me. If political agenda is your life, you may hate me or love me. And I think I got a lot of haters out there when I started saying this is the dumbest recession ever. Why are we going into this recession with Liberation Day? I even built a Liberation Day strategy in TrendSpider that technically should get us back in when we're in an upward market.
Love it. Thanks for what you do, Gary. And I appreciate it. And we'll get this out sooner.
Thanks, Dustin. I'll be back anytime you want me.